Texas Talking. Oh, what was that that you said? Texas Talking. Oh, gonna hoop upside your head. Texas Talking.
Tell me who can. Hello, and welcome to the TripCast. This is Renu Kator, President and Chancellor of the University of Houston. You know, we have worked very, very, very hard to become a Tier 1 university, and it's all paying off. I finally get to do a Tier 1 thing, to introduce Reeve Hamilton. So, here is your host, Reeve Hamilton. Go Cougs, go Reeve.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TripCast for the second week of September. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Editor Emily Ramshaw.
I think the way you say editor is really interesting.
He says it with a certain amount of
disdain.
Disdain.
Yeah. I almost think it's like
resentment.
Almost like a rolled R.
It's funny because I can't roll my R's.
Huh. Well, you're close.
Okay, well,
see to
as
it.
Long as you'll confuse it with respect, then we're all set.
Respect.
Luckily, Ben Philpott doesn't edit anything. He just hosts Agenda Texas for KUT in the Texas Tribune, and he is also here.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
Talk about lack of excitement.
I expected a roll tide there.
Roll tide? I can do that, too. I'll be at Texas A&M watching that game as a
when is that
Alabama
Saturday?
Alumni. It's a Saturday, yep.
Great. Speaking of universities.
Hey, I got 5 seconds of sports in. Okay, let's go.
Speaking of universities, the U.S. News and World Report University Rankings came out this week. And Ben, how many top 50 universities do you think Texas has?
One.
It has one. That was right.
Just wow. One?
Yeah, for the first time in many years, Texas only has one top 50 university. And UT Austin dropped from 45th to 46th down to 52nd.
They changed the ranking, right? They changed the weight of incoming SAT and ACT scores.
Yeah, so the hang up, and so you see A&M
I'm
also
a high school senior. I'm really up on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. A&M also dropped a few spots down from I forget where they were. They're in the 60s. But
Rice is the only one in the top 50, correct?
Yeah, it's number 18.
That's pretty high.
A&M dropped from 65th to 69th.
If you take out, that's
Rice
it,
is
right.
A fearsome beastie. It's a really good school.
It's 18th, but it dropped. It was 17th last year, but it was tied with a little school called Vanderbilt University. But
how does Vanderbilt do? Vanderbilt.
It is no longer tied. Now Vanderbilt is 17th and Rice is 18th.
No, that's no really wonder you wanted
Vanderbilt
to talk
has come
about
up
this
since
on
you
the
left.
Podcast.
Is that what you're? Vanderbilt's risen in the rankings since.
Can't wait
young
to see
Reeve
what
Hamilton
happens to the Texas Tribune after you leave.
It'll move up to number 17.
Yeah. That's why he says editor like that.
No, but Ross is right. What happened is U.S. News and World Report changed their rankings so that SAT and ACT scores count more and your incoming students' class rankings in high school count less.
That seems like a bad decision.
Well, it's because a lot of public schools now don't
have stopped ranking.
They don't do class rankings, so it doesn't make any sense. And also, SAT and ACT seem to be a more important admissions criteria elsewhere in the country. The thing is, in Texas, for schools like UT, Austin, and Texas A&M, they have to accept, in UT Austin's case, almost all of their class based entirely on class rank with no regard to standardized test scores.
Well, it's a standard score across the entire country, so that's, I guess they would think that's a more equal way to evaluate than, you know, if you could be in the top 10 of a class of 50 or the top 10 of a class of 300, and
right.
It's just harder to figure that out.
I'm going to sort of so the top 10% rule sort of is hurting the Texas public flagships.
At least
in the U.S.
rankings.
News and World Report.
Well, and I can tell
those
you, you know, after
kind of important.
After having been on the college tour circuit for a little bit with my daughter, the colleges seem to sort of really hate. Some of them hate it, but they use it. Some of them hate it, but they don't use it. But they really hate this U.S. News thing.
It's
the whole ranking system and all the messes with their marketing.
Before I went to Alabama, the first school I went to was Birmingham Southern, and my freshman class was the first class after they got ranked the number one liberal arts school in the South from U.S. News and World Report. And that freshman class was twice the size of any of their other incoming freshman classes that they had ever had.
Right, and they don't pay, you know, the universities say they hate it, but they don't hate it when it, you know, ranks them in the top 50 and they can splash it all over their literature.
Oh, Birmingham Southern was, I mean, everything you got in the mail said number one in the South.
Right. Well, they like everyone likes the rankings that they rank higher in. And right. But Arne Duncan, the education secretary, just railed against U.S. News and World Report rankings recently at a thing. But and there are other competitors, like Washington Monthly has their rankings now, and they're more geared. Whereas U.S. News is more about sort of prestige. Washington Monthly is more about like what good do you do socially. It's
well,
about low income.
They're all about
students,
economic mobility, and you know
how much community can, service right. do students do. And A&M and UTEP, right. UT El Paso, are both in the top 10 in Washington Monthly. And then you see so UT Austin, which is 52nd in U.S. News, is number 25th in the world in the Times Higher Education Rankings, which come out of London. So it really is all totally yeah. arbitrary. The thing is, U.S. News and World Report is the one that. It's still sort of the standard bearer for the public, I think.
Maybe yeah. we need to do a Texas Tribune college rankings.
Oh, no.
Put
no.
Reeve in charge.
That'd be a good way to get a lot of people pissed off.
Vanderbilt would be number one, I think.
No. These are only Texas universities
oh, it's mo-
in our
roof.
Study.
Oh, in our city.
In our study.
Oh, study.
In our city. That would be small.
So I remember, good.
Yeah.
When I went to college, really my only motivation.
Back in the day, right?
Yeah.
I'm about to go to one of my reunions. I'm not going to tell you which one.
Fifth?
Numero cinco.
You're getting close. Yeah.
Fourth?
But when I was looking at colleges, I mean, I had a few things I wanted to be south, and I didn't want to – well, I didn't want to be in New England. But other than that, it was really just what is the highest ranked school in U.S. News and World Report that I can get into. It was my only criteria.
It was?
More or less.
That is really
I could pretend like it was other things, but – That was really
at least you had a criteria. I mean, a lot of students, don't really have a criteria. They're sort of like, oh, that sounds pretty good.
See, I think,
I was kind of unconscious looking at college.
I think U.S. News had a big impact on where I went to school too. I mean,
had no impact on where I went to school.
Yeah, I think Northwestern was unranked.
Maybe.
No, I'm just kidding. I just didn't. It's not in our post because it's not in our city, as you said.
Well, this suddenly took an ugly turn.
Started with the editor.
What's this podcast about anyway?
Well, now let's make it about Dan Morales, why don't we?
Dan Morales has resurfaced. He sent a letter to...
Who the heck is Dan Morales?
Dan Morales is a former state attorney general, gubernatorial candidate, House Ways and Means chairman. He was at one time kind of the leading contender among, you know, in conversation anyway about, you know, which Hispanic... Texas Democrat is most likely to be the first Hispanic governor. You know, he was sort of in that running. And he ended up in federal prison instead.
So not him then.
No, so not him. Yeah. He went to prison after some stuff that came up around the state's tobacco lawsuit. Texas was one of a bunch of states that sued the tobacco companies on the grounds that the state was providing state and federal money to take care of people who were basically victims of the products of the tobacco companies. And the tobacco companies ended up settling this case, in Texas's case, for $15 billion to the state, $2.3 billion to cities and counties, and $3.2 billion in settlement money to the five attorneys who settled the case on behalf of the state. Morales had brought in five external attorneys. And he's now out of prison, and he has sent a letter to current Attorney General Greg Abbott that says that there is a bunch of sealed material in federal court that if it were opened and if the Attorney General were to look through it, he might find reason to argue for forfeiture of the money going to those attorneys that might
That's instead the 2 billion?
Go to state. That's the $3.2
billion. $3.2 billion.
Do we have any idea what that – sealed material that could lead to that?
We do not. We do not. I mean, sort of the general idea here, there's a lawsuit that doesn't have anything to do with tobacco that's sort of the supporting lawsuit for this. And it has to do with the duty of attorneys. And if you have more than one client, are you taking care of all of your clients first or yourself first? And sort of the idea here is that the attorneys were working on a universal settlement with a bunch of other states, and they might have This kind of hinted at. It's not because it's in sealed documents. You can't get right to it. But the implication is that the lawyers were maximizing their return instead of their client's return and so might ought to forfeit some of their client money.
Right.
Abbott hasn't opened this because Morales had this letter. This was weird how this kind of went down. Morales had this cover letter that went with this package of documents that he sent over to Greg Abbott's office. They hand-delivered it over there, and he gave us a copy of the letter – And in reporting on it, you know, I called the Attorney General's office and they said, we haven't seen it yet. And I flipped them a copy of the letter, like, you know, just a commonplace. Here's the letter I'm asking you to comment on. And they looked at the letter, and because it referred to sealed documents, they looked at the package that they hadn't opened yet and said, we're not going to open a package that might have sealed documents in it. So they sent it back.
So if they won't open, I mean,
you just cost the state $3.2 billion.
Yeah, I know. Way to go, Ross. Right. So if the AG's office, I mean, who's in a position to actually potentially do something about this? I mean, Morales is a Democrat. You know, there's not really a huge probably incentive for Abbott to open those documents or pursue it. So what happens now?
If the state, you know, I mean, so there's a couple of things here. One of them is all of this would depend on Abbott having legal access to documents sealed by a federal judge. So the first thing is to find out whether Abbott, because of his standing in the case as the attorney for the state, could look at him as they are, or whether the federal judge, in this case it's Sam Sparks here in Austin, if the federal judge would either lift the seal or allow Abbott to look in and leave it sealed to the public. So the first thing is, can he look at the documents? Second thing is there a case here? Is there some reason to think that the state might be able to get some money? Politically, I mean, you know, for Abbott, it wouldn't necessarily hurt a Republican to snap a trial lawyer. You know, if you could get to that, you know, I don't think you can get to that really, really quickly. Abbott is going to be a candidate at least for the next 14 months until the November election. I'm assuming he gets through the primary in March. So I'm not sure it has an immediate benefit. At the same time, I'm not sure Abbott has any reason other than it's a distraction not to try if this is there. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a chance that the state might have access to some or all of that $3.2 billion that's otherwise going to those trial lawyers.
Why is Morales still pushing this? It's been 10 years. Right?
Yeah, he has sort of a two-step thing here. One of them is that, you know, he says just flat out, you know, I was guilty. I did the things that they said I did. I broke the law. I should have gone to federal jail. That was, you know, all. I'm not protesting that. I'm not trying to clear my name. But there is involved in the stuff, you know, that did eventually send me to jail. There was, he thinks, some improprieties committed by those lawyers that ought to come to light. I don't think he has a way to personally profit from this, which is going to be the other question and, you know, not completely answered. I haven't found a way that he would personally profit from this. He doesn't practice law anymore.
Is this a way to sanitize his reputation a little for what some people consider is Democrats being more in play 4 years from now or 6 years from now or whatever?
I don't know. It's hard to read the motives. I mean, it really is. You know, Dan Morales is an interesting guy. He's really smart, but he's a strange cat, and he was always kind of a strange cat in politics. You never could figure out exactly which direction he was going to go. For example, it was he was the attorney general who settled the Hopwood case with the University of Texas. And a lot of Democrats at the time thought he was settling that case against the interests of liberals and Democrats and minorities. And, you know, he's not predictable.
The Hopwood case is what essentially got rid of affirmative action.
Race-based admissions at the University of Texas, right.
And which led to the 10% law, which now is bringing down the public schools in the rankings.
See how he just wrapped all of that up?
Yeah.
So, you know, his motives are hard to figure out here.
I also just quickly say that Northwestern was ranked 12th this year?
Phew.
Northwestern outranked Vanderbilt.
And Rice.
Well, there you have it. So
that's what were you saying?
Ramshaw gets a halo.
I already had one.
So his it's shinier now. Mm-hmm. So Morales' motives are hard to figure out. But, you know, there's the first question is, so wait, does Texas get some more money out of this? Is there a case here? And, you know, everybody's nose twitches a little bit when there's a big package of sealed documents. What's in there? You know, maybe there's a Christmas present. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, let's move on to the people that want the seat that Morales used to have then. Why don't we? And I guess specifically the candidate for attorney general that has gotten the most attention this last couple of weeks is Barry Smitherman. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Probably. I mean, you know, other than Dan Branch's selfies in front of El Paso Mexican food joints.
That was a little weird.
But Smitherman, who is a railroad commissioner, former PUC chairman, and is running for attorney general, he's sort of gotten a lot of national attention for his comments in a couple of different cases. One was a speech about – it was to the Texas Alliance for Life, and it was about the need to procreate more. He was saying people should get married younger. They should have more children. He said that the U.S. essentially had sort of opted into a one-child policy a la China. And he also sort of made an offhand comment that he thinks that many of the
aborted fetuses would have voted Republican.
Unborn children would have voted Republican. And so we asked the campaign for his methodology in figuring that. They said it was just statistics. Most Texans vote Republican. He was talking about the Texan fetuses, so they would have voted Republican.
But if you play this out, which is kind of complicated.
Go ahead.
Well, if you're assuming that were those fetuses' parents Democrats? Is that what we're assuming?
People often tend to vote the way their parents voted. That is true.
This is just it is just such a strange thing to say. And the whole speech I found quite strange.
Is this and not comparing Dan Branch to Dewhurst, but is this the Ted Cruz method of running to the far right to win a primary?
Well, I think
certainly.
It's definitely on the right, but I think Barry Smitherman is also on the right sort of naturally. He was speaking to the Texas Alliance for Life, so he was talking about birth issues. I mean, I don't know if it was
right,
it wasn't a campaign promise that he would make all the young children get married and have babies.
My favorite quote from the whole thing was he was talking about premarital sex, and he said, "If your activity results in a situation, get married." It was a weird speech.
It was a totally weird speech.
And then right on the heels of that.
And have a lot of kids. That's the other thing. He said, basically like start young and have a lot of kids.
Right on the heels of that, he did an interview with WorldNet Daily in which he said that he's always sort of, in all of his government roles, he sort of plans for the day when Texas is an independent nation or to strengthen it so it can be an independent nation. And he got a lot of attention for that.
This is sort of like the echo of Rick Perry's,
if we want to leave, we can.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. He didn't necessarily say we are on our way out of the country. He just said we should be a strong state. Right. Couldn't you just spin it that way?
Said lifeboats ready.
I mean,
just in case there's a zombie apocalypse, we'll be able to seal the borders and secure ourselves.
I think there are clearly some people who have read these speeches and the speech in the interview and thought, well, this is a bit strange. But is it anything that actually hurts them in a Republican primary? Or
it depends on what opponents make of it. I mean, when we get
so
to the,
far, not very
so far,
much.
Yeah, not much at all.
When we get to the point where we're actually talking about when we're out of the finance primary, they're raising money. So they are talking about this, but they're not talking about it in public. They're talking about it to all the people that they raise money from. When Dan Branch and Ken Paxton are talking about Barry Smitherman to, Daddy and Mommy Warbucks about, who give money to political campaigns, they're certainly mentioning the Smitherman stuff and saying, maybe there's a vulnerability here. Maybe the guy's not guarded enough in what he says. He's not a careful politician, yada, yada, yada. When we get to the public part of the primaries in December and January, when that really starts to kick up, then we'll find out whether they're grabbing these tapes and throwing them up on their TV spots, when they're competing with the David Dewhurst Allen police tape on television.
But with the Dewhurst police tape, you can say he shouldn't have done that. I mean, with the Smitherman thing, what can you really argue? Texas should be dependent on the rest of the country?
Well, the question is going to be
are any of the things he said
out of tune with what the voters in the Republican primary want to hear? And if he's saying things that – well, I mean that's the calculation they're going to make.
Right.
If what he's saying is harmonious in a Republican primary, they won't talk about it. And if it may become an issue later if he is the guy who emerges from a Republican primary and if there's a Democratic candidate, it's the kind of thing from a Republican primary that a Democrat would use later on. For his immediate stuff, he may look at this and say, inside the Republican primary, this all works.
Right. I mean, that's a whole lot of if-thens. You were assuming there would even be a Democratic contender for that seat.
Right. Right.
Which at this point.
Which we should know in a few weeks, right?
Once
Wendy Davis makes her decision, we're supposed to get all these announcements.
A flood of candidates.
Everybody down ballot's going to have to look at this and say.
A wave of sarcasm.
Everybody who looks at this is going to have to say, okay, so even if Wendy Davis runs, if she wins or loses, does she pull enough people to the polls that another Democrat down ballot might have a shot in the sort of the mold of, you know, Clayton Williams loses the governor's race, but Rick Perry wins the Agriculture Commission race. And that's the first part. The second part is, do they have the money to do it? And the third part is going to be some calculation that each candidate's going to have to make on the Democratic side to figure out whether the Republicans are going to pick somebody who's acceptable to a Republican primary electorate, but not to a general election electorate. And, you know, those are, again, that's a bunch of ifs. I don't know how many people are going to pile into these races or not. There's conversation around Letitia Vandeput for lieutenant governor, but I haven't heard a lot.
No, it's been very, further down very the ballot. Quiet. And I know some of the
Mike Collier for comptroller.
Right.
I know some of the groups who fund, you know, female Democrats have been, while they've had lots of conversations around the Wendy Davis stuff, there is has not been hardly any outreach, you know, on the Vandeput side. So that
would,
may
would some
be.
Of the groups include Annie's List? What are the groups that fund female Democrats?
Well, I mean, there's groups at the national level, too.
Yeah, there's
who
a lot
totally,
of Emily's List. And, yeah. You know, gosh, not our Emily, but, you know, right. Emily's List and Annie's
List. I wish
list
I had a list right. long enough.
Yeah.
You don't want to get on Emily's List.
David, that's the other calculation, is if you are another Democrat and you want to run on the statewide Texas ballot, is anybody going to be able to raise money, or is all the money going to go to Wendy? Right.
And can she share? Can she be like, I've got all this money, here you go?
I don't think she's going to be in a position to share. I think she's going to be fully employed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to be, you know, if you prosecute a race like that, you're not going to be able to worry about all the other people on the ballot. You're going to say, I hope I can create enough of a tailwind to bring some other people into office. But
right. I mean, what does Abbott have now? 12 million?
21 million.
21 million.
And that was it. And that was at mid-year.
I had it just reversed.
That's a Northwestern education.
Again, I did not major in math.
And that was at mid-year. He's raised a considerable amount of money since then without showing his – they haven't had to reveal cash in hand.
Well, are there any – as we are – just continue because there's nothing else to do. Speculate on who might be running. Is there...
Speak for yourself. Don't have much to do.
Well, I meant in terms of this race or in terms of the 2014 campaign.
In terms of the podcast.
Yeah.
Are there any, you know, four-year term Democrats in the Senate that already have some money that might want to run? Does Kirk Watson want to run for anything?
Sure.
I don't know. I think he's one of the people making that calculation.
Yeah.
You know? Is there a reason to do this? If you run this year and you don't win, is that a career builder or a career ender? I mean, they've all got to kind of sit down and, you know.
Figure that out.
Well, can we go back over to the Republicans and talk about piling into a race? We were talking about Smitherman just a second ago. One guy that's decided to run for his seat is Wayne Christian. Were we expecting his return?
No, and I wasn't expecting.
Weird late announcement. Seems like a late-ish announcement.
Well, it's not late. I mean, they don't have to announce until. The only reason to announce now is to run the finance primary, mm-hmm. to raise money. If you have the money or you think you can raise the money later because the candidates now are weak, you can wait all the way till the end. You know, filing will begin in the first week of December and go probably to the one – I don't know the exact day, but one of the – in the first week of January. You can wait. The field for Railroad Commission had, I think, 5 Republicans in it already, and none of them are well-known. And I think Wayne Christian looked at it and said, you know – I'm going to jump into that race because nobody's well known. I've been able to raise money before. There's some talk that he's been able to raise some money in East Texas that primes the pump here. And
can you give a quick bio on who Wayne Christian is?
Wayne Christian's a former member of the Texas House. He ran for a newly created seat in Congress that Louis Gohmert won. And so he was out of the House for one term and then got elected back in. He got beat in 2012 by Chris Patti. And after his district was redrawn in a new redistricting, he was the leader, I think, of the – I'm going to mess this up – the conservative coalition in the House, one of the conservative groups in the House. He's, you know, he's been around for a while. He's from East Texas. He's from center. He's never run statewide, but neither has anybody else in that race. And
he got lampooned in Doonesbury, correct, for –
right.
Women's health issues. He kind of led the charge to defund Planned Parenthood in 2011. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, and, we were talking about Smitherman's recent comments and sort of the attention they've gotten. I mean, I've got to say that Wayne Christian has said, given some of the strangest speeches I've heard in my 3 legislative sessions.
And I'm sure Ray Keller and Becky Berger and Stephanie Carter and all the rest of them in that race are going to be reminding us of everything Wayne Christian ever said.
The great one was when he said that he had experienced racism because he was benched on his high school basketball team.
Right.
Because quote, white men can't jump.
Was that really part of the quote?
Yeah.
I think I've heard that line before.
He's kind of short, too.
goes Ross discriminating against him again.
We'll also have an update on the Supreme Court justice situation before we end this podcast.
Wallace Jefferson is retiring, or resigning rather, at the end of the month. Hasn't said what he's going to do next, but he says he won't be running for office again. Rick Perry responded to that by appointing Nathan Hecht, the longest serving member of the court. He's about to be the longest serving in history. I think in January or February, he'll pass Joe Greenhill as the longest serving member of the Texas Supreme Court.
Was this a surprise at all?
It wasn't. I mean, there was a lot of speculation around Eva Guzman and Don Willett and also Jeff Boyd, who was Perry's former chief of staff, who are all
– He's a recent arrival, though,
members of the court. Perry went this way, and then there was a little bit of speculation for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes that Hecht would be doing a valedictory run and then would be retiring at the end of this. I talked to him yesterday. We're taping this on Wednesday. I talked to him yesterday, and he said he's going to run for a full 6 years as Chief Justice in the 2014 election. So now there's still an opening on the court. Jefferson's position is filled by Hecht. Hecht's position is now open, and Perry has another appointment to make. That person will run for the remainder of Hecht's term in 2014.
How dramatically different a state will Texas be when we come back for the start of the legislative session in 2015? Will all these changes, you have a new Chief Justice on the Supreme Court, you're going to have a new governor.
Potentially a new lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm. New attorney general.
Depending on how the House elections go, the same or a new speaker. I mean, everything's in play in a way that it hadn't been in a long time. One of the true facts about Texas government, sort of the everybody knows conventional wisdom things, has always been that this is a weak governor state, that the governor's powers are pretty constrained. And Rick Perry has, mostly by virtue of his term in office and his ability to appoint boards and name former aides and everything to management positions in all the big agencies, has really extended the reach and the control of the governor's office. And, you know, one of the questions after he leaves is going to be, do we snap back to weak governor system?
Right. How loyal are those people, you know, to the next governor who comes in? You know, but in some ways, by virtue, the fact that they all, you'd assume, share the same sort of political stripes. I mean, I would be surprised if anybody diverged that far from, you know, from the loyalty to the next governor.
But it's still, you still want to have your guy, right? I mean,
yeah.
Right.
So it's not just the elected officials. I mean, if with a new governor, you're looking at a bunch of appointed positions that could likely change, if not immediately, in the near
right. Future. It takes 6 years to turn over all the appointments. You know, it takes 6 years for them to all expire. A governor's term is only 4 years long. It takes a while. And, you know, so the question here is, you know, if Abbott were elected governor, would the Perry appointees be as loyal to Abbott as they have been to Perry? If Davis were elected governor or somebody else like that, obviously we've got an ideological difference and a whole change. It's an opportunity if they take it and if everything falls right for other statewide officials and for the legislative leaders, the lieutenant governor and the speaker, to grab some control back.
All right.
Well, I just want to mention real quickly that Alabama's ranked 86.
I knew it was going to be Alabama.
As 86.
A football team, I thought they were. That's way down in the
rankings. They're ranked somewhere.
Is that number
higher.
Supposed to is be that, impressive or not?
Oh no, not well.
Is I that think, on the Washington Monthly list?
I think it explains
list?
A lot about the way I, you know, perform during the podcast.
Depressed.
Well, if you have any questions or uplifting comments for Ben, please send them to Tribcast.
I'll be just fine after we beat A&M.
Tribcast at TexasTribune.org. You're gonna get us some angry emails with that sort of chatter.
Well, at least they'll come to you and not the rest of us.
That's true.
That's right. I have no access to the Tribcast email.
Well, good. On behalf of Emily, Ben, Ross, and our producer Todd, this is Reeve. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music. Thanks for listening.
Texas talking about Texas talking, baby. Texas talking.
tell you what's happening tonight. Poison. We're moving to Poison.